on 1116 SEN. The Grippers with Simon Helmut and Braden Ingram for Brack & Co. If you're a developer looking for an agent that actually sells out a project, visit brackandco.com.au.
Yes, good afternoon and welcome to The Grippers. We've got another great episode for you today. We've also got a new sponsor on board, as you can hear. It's great to have Brack & Co, a part of The Grippers family. And speaking of The Grippers family, I'm your host today, Braden Ingram, and I'm joined by the greatest of men, a great coach, Simon Helmut. He's with me. How are you, Simon?
Fantastic, Braden. Great to have Matty Bracken on board and looking forward to him being involved with The Grippers. But, mate, the Test Series is alive and well and... What did you say? Did you say 2-1 or 1-2 or 0-3? Well, it's going to be 3-0, isn't it, mate?
You've called it early. Of course, Smokey Dawson's been giving us updates throughout the day. But, look, it hasn't been promising so far. I tell you what, the Australian bowlers, impressive start by them. Impressive start by the batsmen as well to make as many as they did. But I suppose no one expected the pitch to turn out quite like it did on day one. I think maybe... expected a few more overcast conditions and a bit more help for the bowlers. And it did look quite green early on, didn't it? So I suppose that was just fooling us all and Australia had no trouble making any runs.
It was brilliant batting in the first innings for the Aussies. They were fantastic. Brilliant for Usman Khawaja to obviously make that century. Certainly a great relief for him. Davey Warner's certainly lapping up this vice captaincy and leadership, obviously leading from the front there. And look, a really aggressive approach by the captain, Steve Smith. You could tell he was really anxious to get that declaration underway so we could make some inroads into the New Zealand side.
Well, he was the lowest scorer of the inning, so you know he
you
really had to contribute.
He wasn't happy, mate, so he wanted to get in there, you know, get out and do something
exactly.
Different.
last week you said Usman Khawaja, the question over him probably wasn't his technique, but maybe sometimes with his temperament in the field and how he behaves. How did you see him so far in this test? Does he look like that's changed so far?
Oh, look, great intent. He was busy. He was organised. He was rotating the strike. And look, those little things are really important when you're part of a side. And look, it's important he contributes as well in the field. I'm sure he will. But look, he was a class act. We've always known he's a class act. They didn't bowl particularly well in that first innings. And that gave Australia a chance. That wicket... there was enough play in that wicket, yep. And we saw it in day two as well and today, that there's enough in the wicket for the bowlers. Mark Taylor says a really interesting comment, especially in the first few days of the Gabba test. There's opportunities for both bat and ball. Wickets can come in a hurry,
yep.
as we've already seen. But you can score. If you get a partnership and you get in, you can really score and you can score quite quickly.
I've got to ask now about the New Zealanders going into this summer. I know it's very early. We've still got plenty of test cricket to be played, but... is there a feeling that maybe the public, the media, us, we maybe overestimated them?
Oh, we just thought, you know, they've played good cricket, yep. Over recent times. Stats will show, and their win-loss ratio will show that they've been in good form.
It's very early as well.
It is early, but look, I was just so disappointed in their method and the way in which they just couldn't put any pressure on the Australians. And we were good. We stuck in for some quiet periods, but then when it leaked, it leaked a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the other problem for them is Tim Southee. He's got a bit of a back complaint, yep. And you lose him, not just for the rest of this test match, but if he's not available for someone like the Wacker, they could have a little bit of trouble there because you need someone who can bowl swing into the breeze, the Fremantle doctor.
Yep.
And without him, that poses a big problem, you'd think.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue for them right now. If he's not fit, he's still the leader of the attack, even though obviously Trent Bolt's going to have a huge influence on the success of the Kiwis this summer. If Tim Southee's out, that's going to leave a big, big hole, and they lose a bit of leadership with the ball. So hopefully he can get through whatever back injury he has and get through this test match and be right for the next one.
Here on The Grippers, thanks to Brack & Co. It's time to chat to ESPN Cricket Info journalist Jared Kimber. He's also just finished up a movie, Death of a Gentleman, with Sam Collins, who they've co-produced it and co-directed. It's basically about the future of Test cricket, where it's heading, and here's a little bit of a grab from the movie before we get into it.
Could you outline for us what the key problems with cricket, as you see them, are? It's the best I've got. As one of the chief consumers...
I'd condense it into a question, which I don't think administrators have answered, which is that does cricket make money in order to exist, or does it exist in order to make money? And I think that hitherto the first has applied, increasingly the second applies.
That was the voice of esteemed cricket writer Gideon Haigh. He makes a number of appearances in Death of a Gentleman, and Jared Kimber, who is part of that movie and an ESPN Cricket Info writer, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Jared.
Hey, mate. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for joining myself and Helmo here on The Grippers. First of all, do we have an answer to Gideon's question?
Well, I think his last sort of answer is as best there. But, essentially, cricket is currently made because it makes money, essentially. So you only have to look at the huge political upheaval about money in sport. We're certainly not playing it just for the love of the game. We're playing it because it makes a lot of money, and we're trying to, the way that the board, three main boards are looking after it, they're trying to squeeze as much money as they can out of it rather than grow the game and build the game and make the game the most important thing. So, yeah, at the moment, it's about the Benjamin.
When you set out to make this movie, it wasn't the movie that it turned out to be, did it? What was the original movie you were trying to make, and how did it turn into the one that it became?
Yeah, we originally thought we'd do something around the future of Test cricket. And, you know, everyone sort of, in cricket, everyone's so lazy and they chat and they say things like, oh, this Test cricket's dying. So we thought, well, we'll have a look at that and see if it's actually happening. And a little way into that, we realized that wasn't the biggest question. The biggest question was who was running cricket and why were they running it and how were they running it? And that sort of became more of a political film than a cricket film in the end. And, you know, it doesn't always come out very well for the people who run cricket, especially not the people from Cricket Australia, the ECB and the BCCI in India.
Hey, Jared, I had a sneak preview of Death of a Gentleman. When does it come out in England or in Australia? When will it be released?
Yeah, it's already been released in England. We released it during the Ashes.
Okay.
So we did very well in England. In Australia, we've had some problems getting some releases, but we believe we've signed with a company now, so we should have one fairly soon. So I hope somewhere around Christmas you'll be able to get it. It is available on Amazon in the UK, so you can buy it on DVD and actually send it over if you know, whatever regions. I get confused with regions on DVD these days. But, but if you can work that out, you can definitely watch it. But it will be released in Australia and hopefully sometime around Christmas, so during the height of the cricket season there.
Now, it takes it for a journey over the last, three or four years it took you to finally get to final cut. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it took us about the best part of 4 years.
Yeah.
It's not easy getting a film like this, especially you got to imagine, like, we went into offices and said to people, yeah, we're making a film about, you know, cricket politics and these sorts of things. And we, you know, people just basically fell asleep before we finished the sentence. The film is obviously a lot more entertaining than that, but trying to explain it to people was never particularly easy. So it took a long time to convince people. And also, for the greatest amount of time, we were making a film about something that hadn't quite happened yet. We sort of knew that there was going to be a major change in cricket and that India, Australia and England were doing something behind the scenes, but they hadn't done anything. So we had this film that we pretty much finished, but we had no ending. And then luckily, the three monsters reared their head and took over cricket. And they, you know, as you guys probably know, the ICC money, 52% of that goes to the three richest boards, Australia, England and India. So they made it quite easy for us at the end. But for a long time, we were sort of battling invisible monsters.
Jared, you speak of those invisible monsters. You certainly chased them for a while. But Test cricket, if we are to make changes now, if the ICC does step in and decide that growth of the game is crucial, is it too late to stop Test cricket from effectively dying?
No, not at all. I mean, the funny thing about Test cricket is we found this out early on when we talked to a bunch of TV producers, is that they love it. It goes for 5 days. It has an ongoing narrative, and the people who love it always come back to watch it. So from a TV executive point of view, it's a brilliant product. Should it be day night? You know, at times, obviously, because it would be in prime time, it would make even more money. You know, there are other ways of making Test cricket better. But when it comes down to it, all the things that have happened to international cricket over recent times can be changed and things can be improved. It is a little bit like climate change in that there are still people within the game itself who almost deny that it exists, that there is this problem going on. But the people that it's affecting definitely understand this. There are things that can be done right now that can help world cricket. For instance, the next World Cup is still at 10 teams. It could be 12 teams. It could be 14 teams. There's no reason why they can't change that. The schedules aren't out. You know, there's no reason why little things can't be changed. And there's no reason why Test cricket can't be helped as well. the biggest problem is that the people who are actually running the game are not really worrying about these sorts of things at the moment. The only major thing that India have done since taking over the game is a stamp out chuckers, which, you know, some people would even say is a good thing. But that's the only thing they've done to the sport. Everything else is just sort of doing what cricket always does, sort of floating towards an uncertain future.
You say it's the little things. In your movie, Giles Clark, who at that time was the chairman of the ECB, I believe he's now president, he says that the Olympics is a complete non-starter, that it had basically ruined the ECB's calendar in terms of county cricket and their test match summer. But in recent months, as Colin Graves taken over from Giles Clark at the ECB, it sounds like the Olympics now is coming into fruition and might be a possibility in coming years. Is that a sign that things are maybe going in the right direction?
Yeah, and we got some credit for that because obviously we pushed the Olympics quite hard in the film. And there are a lot of casual cricket fans especially who are just like, really, why do we need cricket in the Olympics? But I don't think they understand that the women's game still isn't funded. Disability cricket still isn't very well funded. And in fact, a lot of disability things aren't even part of the major board. Olympics is so important for cricket from a grassroots level, especially in the associate countries, all the way up to test level. There are so many things that cricket could do. So the fact that the ECB changed their mind and they made a decision that maybe wouldn't have helped them financially, but might, in the short term anyway, but will help them grow the game and will actually probably help them get extra funding. And also, you know, once you have an Olympic sport, it's, you know, that so many other people become interested in it and so many other countries as well. So there are so many things that can be done. So the fact that the ECB went, okay, we're willing to give up one of our four summers, and Giles Clark was, I mean, he was completely against it. His numbers didn't make any sense. But it will make a dent in English summer. There's no doubt about that. But that's what international, you know, sport has to do. It has to actually not be about selfish decisions. It has to be about growing the game. And occasionally, the bigger three countries are going to have to say, well, we're already rich. How do we actually make this a more successful sport where more kids are playing it? And that's what it should be about. And I think the Olympics can only help with that.
Jared, the crowds we're seeing all around the world now just seem to not be as significant as they used to be. Do you think that's going to be a concern for Test match cricket?
It is a problem. The biggest problem is, though, not the fact that they're not turning up in the ground, because they make so. I think Cricket Australia and the ECB are probably the only two grounds that make anywhere near in the centre of their profit from actual crowds turning up.
Yep.
It's completely a TV sport now. But the problem is that TV producers absolutely detest showing a test match where there's no one in the ground, because they think that if someone's casually changing channels, they go, well, what's the point of us watching this if no one's even turning up?
That's right.
So it might be a problem in the future. I don't know how cricket completely comes over that. I mean, perhaps day-night matches. I know in the UAE, they're desperate to have day-night matches. No one wants to go out in the middle of the day and actually watch these games. So they're hoping if they have a day-night game, they might actually get a slightly bigger crowd. But it is a problem that cricket needs to look at. I mean, you only need to go to our test in South Africa and see the lack of crowds. Mm. And this is, you know, they probably have the greatest team that South Africa's ever had consistently ever is playing at the moment. And they're struggling to get people into their test matches. That's a big problem.
Hey, Jared, in all your investigations in putting together this movie, or even you could even call it a documentary, what staggered you? What couldn't you have believed, or what was so surprising? Because, I mean, you've been following, obviously, this game and commentating and being a journalist. What did you find a real strange happening, or what was quite significant?
It didn't make the film, actually, but I can tell you what it was, because it still shocks me when I say it. They had the 2000th test, I think, just before we started making the film. And in the 2000 test, they spent more money on bringing out all the chairmen and presidents and dignitaries and their families out to England to celebrate the 2000 test than you actually get for being the number one test team at the end of the year.
We know that happens at club level, Jared. You know that. If you're on the board, you get to come to the lunch, or that happens in many things.
The interesting thing about cricket is how much it is just like a club, a run like club cricket, set with billions of dollars involved.
Yeah,
like, you
sure.
only have to look at the English, like, you know, Giles Clark made the decision to get involved with Alan Stanford, and Alan Stanford's currently serving a 90-year jail term somewhere in a federal institution in America. And there's no way, as a businessman, he would have got involved with someone like Stanford. But in cricket, it's just so amateur, and it is like, oh, well, this guy's offering $20 million for a game, we'll get involved. And that's what it's like. And it's a billion-dollar amateur sport. It is really interesting.
Jared, in your opinion, can all three formats survive? Or if one was going to go, who'd be going? Which one would be going first?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, early on in the film, when we were making it, especially, we talked about this a lot. It's quite interesting when you look at, there are so many different forms of a car racing that all seem to coexist. But the thing is, they're not all run by one organisation.
Yeah.
And I think that's cricket's biggest problem, is it has three formats all run by one organisation. I would suggest that one day cricket is probably still the most vulnerable, only because T20 just seems better at what it does. And Test cricket really does fill, the people who love Test cricket are so obsessed by it. I can't see how it would ever actually completely disappear. It may diminish at times, but I can't see how it would disappear. Yeah. But the thing that I remember a TV executive telling me this in India, he said, the great thing about one day cricket is we can show 100 ads a day in between a game. So as long as people keep watching one day cricket, it's hard to see how it will go. I think we might see a position in the future where one day cricket is only majorly played at the World Cup, and bilateral one dayers and T20s disappear a little bit. And that would be really good for cricket, I think, because I've got no problem with domestic T20 and World Cup one dayers. But when you're playing a 7-match one day series against a bilateral country, I mean, anyone who can keep their eyes open for that entire tournament deserves an Olympic gold medal.
Jared, thank you very much for your time, mate. Good luck with the film, Death of a Gentleman. Hopefully, as you say, it'll be out around Christmas. Visit changecricket.com to get more information of sorts. You can have a look on Twitter as well. But Jared, good luck with it all, and thanks for your time, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Certainly a great chat. As ESPN Cricket Info journalist Jared Kimber, it's an important movie, Death of a Gentleman. Make sure when it does get out to Australian shores, you do see it. Now, of course, we are here for Bracken Co. Matt Bracken is director of that great company. Visit brackenco.com.au. If you're a developer looking for an agent that actually sells out a project, or even if you're looking for a great investment or a cracking place to live, make sure you visit brackenco.com.au or give Matt Bracken a call on 0402-098-888. 0402-098-888.
Fantastic bloke, Matty. Great to have him on board. But, Brado, it's time for the over.
Brendan McCullum, he's come in for a bit of criticism, and I'd like to get your perspective as a coach. There was a couple of occasions there where he had an 8-1 field, and then a ball later he had Tim Southee bowling around the wicket to a 4-5 field, something ridiculous like that. If you're a coach, is that something that he's discussed with Mike Hessen, or is that what he's implementing, and then you're going to have a word to him at the next opportunity, break?
I'm sure him and Hesso would have had a conversation, but just thinking, Brado, during the Cricket Australia 11, they took one wicket for 500 odd. They were at one stage, I think, they've taken 5 wickets for about 1,100. So I reckon he's probably now got an idea. I'm going to keep changing this up and try and get myself a wicket. We've always praised Brendan McCullum being an attacking captain, being pretty flexible in his field placements. He had a bowlers go down. So I don't mind it. I don't mind him messing around with the field, trying to change it up, hopefully to try and get a wicket. Mate, where's Peter Siddle at? Where's my mate Peter Siddle? Because I could not believe that he wasn't picked in this test.
Yeah, I think there was a lot. I know Rodney Hogg said it had a very similar sentiment. I mean, it was great to see him picked at the Oval. There was a lot of...
too late, mate.
Exactly. There's a lot of calls that he should have played at Trent Bridge before the series was over, although it didn't matter when we were bowled out for 60, but that's another matter. But given his age, you just feel that now this is the second time in recent test matches where he's been snubbed. Not just that test match in Nottingham, but before that series, I don't think he played in the West Indies series either. So it had been a little time before he'd had a go, and he was perfectly suited to some of those English conditions. And you feel that given the way that English series played out, with Josh Hazlewood leaking runs. And I think it even showed a little bit today. Mitchell Johnson was off pretty early because he just was slightly off. And Mitchell Starc also, well, not as much, but you feel that when you go, as you mentioned before, with three elite pacemen, there's no one really to pull yourself back. And other than Nathan Lyon, obviously that's a completely different role. Now, over in India, Mahali pitch. It's India taking on South Africa. India make 201. Dean Elgar takes 4 wickets, which is just ridiculous.
It's like
itself.
Michael Clarke took 6 for 9.
Exactly.
You know?
And then you've got South Africa bowled out for 184, and then India start to make runs. Yep. What's going on with that pitch?
I'm not sure what you did in your backyard, Brado, when you played backyard cricket. But for us, when we got a bit bored, you were batting too well, you put a hose on the water or wet the track. I tell you what, mate, this wicket, it's just like it's eroding. eroding away. I reckon there'll be hardly a wicket left. There's all this rubble at either end, and there's just a little bit of pitch in the middle, a bit like the old SCG many, many years ago when it was a proper spinning track. So I don't think anything over 150 is going to be nearly impossible for the South Africans to chase down at the end.
It's not turning into Blacktown with the jigsaw puzzle that we saw last week.
No, it's staying. Well, it's consistent rubble.
Right.
It's not going to be dangerous because the quicks last for about 3 overs. That's the beauty of India. You can get some great wickets. You can get some green bouncy ones. Doesn't bounce high, but this particular wicket not looking fantastic, not looking great. And but our man De Villiers, he was the only one.
Your 60, man.
64, 65, love fantastic. Him. Hey, Pakistan, they've knocked over the Poms 2-0.
Yep.
Where are they sitting now in the pecking order? Are they the real deal?
Yeah, they're second ranked in the ICC test rankings now, so they're going all right. But let me just go through their last 12 test matches, which has been since October last year. So they played Australia, won both those test matches. They then played New Zealand. It was 1-1, so a little bit even. Of course, these were all at home. They then travelled to Bangladesh, where they drew 1 and 1-1, then beat Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka 2-1, and now they've beaten England 2-0. The problem for me is every single one of those games on the subcontinent.
Yep.
They haven't travelled everywhere. And we know that if you're playing at home or at least on home-type tracks, which they have been, that that's the sort of cricket that favours. I mean, it's hard to win away from home, especially away from the subcontinent. So for me, they're playing really well. They've got some great players, some older players. Yashir Shah has been an absolute find. He's taken, I think it's 72 wickets.
74, 75, I think.
Yeah, in 12... Yeah, 76, there we go. Yep. 76 in 12 matches. Yeah. Averaging 24. He bowled a magnificent delivery. It's been compared to Shane Warne's...
Yeah, it was the getting ball. Century. It was close.
To dismiss Samit Patel, who was batting pretty well, mind you.
It's hard to get past Samit Patel too, not just from his, you know, his batting pads, mate. He's a large character.
There's a couple of photos that don't... Not too endearing to him.
No, I reckon you're right. They've got to beat teams in England, in South Africa, and Australia. But not easy. Not many countries can do that in the first place. But look, they're playing some great cricket in their home, away from home.
Be good to see how they go in the next coming months when they travel a little bit. Now, T20 All-Star Games. Warney's been all over America. Apparently, he's been on front of the New York Times. He said in an interview the other day, he said, myself and Sachin, we've been getting around. We're getting asked for signatures. Everyone loves us. Get around us. Get excited. Do we care about this 2020 series in baseball parks in the United States? Is it a big thing? Is it going to help grow the game?
Well, talking to Jared, we're not quite sure how it's going to grow, and we're not letting teams, you know, involved in World Cups, etc. But look, I think it's great. We're over in a highly populated area where people love cricket. Many people from Indian background, okay, lots of expats, Aussies over there. I think it's great. The T20 game seems to be the entrance point for their youngsters playing cricket, but also to try and introduce new people to the game. So fantastic, we're over there. I know the CPL, we're going to play a couple of games in Miami, hopefully, in the next edition. Probably shouldn't have said it, but anyway, I've told you, so it's out there. No, they've been talking about it. So I think T20 cricket in the States is going to be something which we got to keep pushing. Not quite sure how good the cricket's going to be. Yeah. It's a bit like watching the seniors golf. But anyway, it's great to see VVS Laxman, a good Hyderabad Sunrisers man, yep. and good to see Brian Lara and others getting out there. Last one, last ball of the over.
Yep.
Olympics.
Yeah.
Does cricket have a place in the Olympics? And if it does, what format?
It absolutely has a place. I think the only format could be 2020. Right. And I think that helps bring nations in because the longer form of the game, they're just going to get pollaxed, especially if they come up even against more established nations like Afghanistan, like if it's China playing Afghanistan, that could be a route. So yeah. I think 2020 brings those smaller nations in. However, James Sutherland suggesting beach cricket or indoor cricket as the way to go.
Imagine beach cricket would be great. You put up the stumps, like you get your old boogie board up as the stumps, you put the sunscreen on, you know, you one hand, one bounce. I reckon you could really actually make it proper beach. It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be great, especially, you know, if we're playing in Japan, they've got plenty of great beaches there. You know, I've played in New Zealand.
I'll make a couple of man-made ones, mate.
Everything else is.
They'll work it out to be fine.
Helmo, it's great to have Bracken Co. on joining us as a sponsor for the Grippers. Brackenco.com.au. If you're looking for a great investment or a cracking place to live, visit brackenco.com.au or give Matty Bracken a call. He's a great bloke. 0402-098-888. Thanks for listening to the Grippers here on 1116 SEN.
Get on the cane train.